Hello there and welcome. Today is Thursday, February 9th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, after all-night protests by Democrats, the president's attorney general is now confirmed. Donald Trump takes aim at U.S. judges weighing in on his travel ban.
Individual consumers will be hurt. We have protected consumers in a way they weren't before.
Also ahead, tragedy strikes the family of pop star Britney Spears and Beyoncé's big news. It's all on today's International Edition. The fate of President Trump's executive order temporarily banning entry into the United States from seven Muslim-majority countries now rests with a federal appeals court. As he awaits the justice's decision, Trump suggested to law enforcement chiefs on Wednesday that politics led a federal judge to suspend his order, and he warned that without the restrictions, the nation's security is being compromised.
I don't ever want to call a court biased, so I won't call it biased. And we haven't had a decision yet. But courts seem to be so political, and it would be so great for our justice system if they would be able to read a statement and do what's right.
VOA's Richard Green has the full story on the Trump administration's efforts to overturn the restraining order that temporarily halts the initiative.
A three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco heard oral arguments Tuesday from opposing lawyers during a telephone conference call that was live-streamed over the Internet and broadcast on cable television news. The judges expressed skepticism about the positions taken by Justice Department Attorney August Flinge, who argued on behalf of the Trump administration.
How many federal offenses have we had being committed by people who came in with visas from these countries? And the ultimate was the answer was there haven't been any.
Yes, Your Honor. These proceedings have been moving quite fast, and we're doing the best we can.
Proceedings are moving fast, but you appealed to us before you continued in the district court to develop the record. So why should we be hearing this now if it sounds like you're trying to say you're going to present other evidence later?
There have been a number of people from Somalia connected to al-Shabaab who have been convicted in the United States.
Is that in the record? Can you point us to where in the record you're referring?
It is not in the record. There has also been other examples, but again, you're correct. These are not in the record.
The judges also challenged arguments by Noah Purcell, the chief lawyer for the state of Washington, which filed a lawsuit against a travel ban along with Minnesota. Purcell maintained the ban is unconstitutional because it specifically targets Muslims.
But the point is that was clearly a motivating, what we have alleged, and again, we do have to show a likelihood of success, but at this stage, the case law is clear. Our plausible allegations are taken as true for assessing that likelihood of success.
That cannot possibly be true. We are supposed to take your word for it, the fact that you make an allegation of the complaint and that equals likelihood of success? You don't really mean that, do you?
Rory Fleming, a law professor with the University of California, said he does not think the judges were persuaded by the government's overall argument.
So, I mean, on balance, it doesn't sound like the court is going to grant the motion to vacate the stay. They might try to narrow that, or they might deny the motion and send it back to the trial court to narrow it, which strikes me as probably the more strategic decision.
The three-court panel said it would issue a ruling as soon as possible. Immigrants have been streaming into the U.S. since the lower court suspended the travel ban last Friday. Opponents say if the ban is restored, it may trigger mass confusion and chaos at many of the nation's airports, just as it did when it was first imposed on January 27th. Hundreds of people were detained by customs officers at airports, and some of them were deported. That action sparked nationwide protests and prompted legal action on many fronts. Professor Fleming said no matter what happens at the federal appeals court, the case is likely to go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. The court has been evenly divided between four liberal-leaning justices and four conservative-leaning ones since the death last year of Justice Antonin Scalia. Richard Green, VOA News, Washington.
Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Researchers fear Muslim-American violent extremism overblown. What America's separation of powers is all about. Life under Islamic State, a secret beauty salon. And yoga may alleviate lower back pain. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Among the many executive orders President Trump has signed since taking office is one that directs the Treasury Secretary to review the 2010 Dodd-Frank financial overhaul. It's Trump's first step at scaling back regulations on financial services. The law is named after co-sponsors Barney Frank and Chris Dodd. It was enacted during the Obama administration to put safeguards in place following the financial meltdown and subsequent Great Recession. President Trump has called the law a disaster, saying it failed to address some of the causes of the financial crisis and makes loans hard to get.
People, friends of mine that have nice businesses, they can't borrow money. They just can't get any money because the banks just won't let them borrow because of the rules and regulations and Dodd-Frank.
Well, the European Central Bank head has expressed concern about the potential moves to relax financial oversight, saying such regulation helped pave the way for the global financial crisis. Well, joining me now to talk more about this is former Democratic Congressman Barney Frank, who served as chair of the House Financial Services Committee and co-sponsored the legislation. Sir, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being with us. What exactly does the president's order do?
Well, the executive order itself does literally nothing. It's almost like an essay, how I spent my summer recapitulated. It is a direction to the people who he will be appointing or has appointed, tell him what he thinks they should do to change the law. We legislated fairly specifically and explicitly, so there is nothing he can do by executive order to change that law because it is a law and has to go through Congress. I am afraid that what he will do is to appoint people who will not use the powers that the law gives very vigorously, and that will be a problem, and it could lead to a buildup of behavior that could ultimately be damaging. But he will now be, I guess, within a couple of months from what he says, be asking Congress to change the law, and what he's up to is pretty much the opposite of what he said he was going to do in his campaign. He boasted about how he was going to go after Goldman Sachs. He attacked them in an ad by name. He was going to stand up to Wall Street. And instead, what he's doing is arguing for the diminution of all those rules that we put in place to prevent irresponsible behavior of the sort that caused the crisis. I don't think he will be successful. I think these actions are sufficiently popular with the public so that he's not going to get 60 Senate votes. In some cases, I don't think he'll get 50.
If the law were overturned or dismantled, what could potentially happen?
Two things. First of all, individual consumers will be hurt. We have protected consumers in a way they weren't before from abusive practices. The great majority of people in the industry are reasonable people, but there will always be some who will abuse. And the problem is, if you do not have good rules, in a situation in which economic entities are competing with each other, there is a tendency for those who are irresponsible to set the pace for the more responsible people. When you pass good laws that prevent abusive behavior, you're protecting the responsible people. What will happen is this. If we didn't have this law, it's what happened before. A number of financial institutions will behave irresponsibly, by which I mean they will take on more risk than they can handle. Now, in the short term, the more business you do as a financial institution, the more you lend to people, the more you trade, the higher your profits will be in the immediate sense. The problem is that you do not, in that situation, that's what happened before, make adequate preparation for things that will go wrong. You don't set aside enough reserves. You take risks. You lend money that you shouldn't lend because too little likelihood it'll be paid back. And what happens is over time, you get a buildup of more debt on the part of these institutions than they are able to discharge if things go wrong. Now, for a while, things may look very good. Everybody's happy because more and more is going on. But inevitably, inevitably in the economic cycle, some of this is going to go back the other way. And what happened before and what we fear would happen again is they will be so overextended in the debt they have incurred and the extension of liabilities that they have incurred that they won't be able to deal with this shortfall and a crisis will occur.
So in other words, people that really can't afford home loans, for example, would be able to get them, and then ultimately the banks would be stuck again and we'd
exactly
have all
right.
the foreclosures.
One provision of the law is a specific prohibition on lending to people who basically can't pay it back. And by the way, that's the only provision in law that restricts lending explicitly. That's exactly what will happen. You will have more of these loans to people who can't pay them back. Alan Greenspan, the great guru of the conservatives, wrote a book in 2007 in which he said, among other things, this is, of course, the year before the crisis, he said, I know some of these loans aren't going to be repaid. They're very risky. But he said it's a risk worth taking. In other words, make loans that aren't good loans because it'll make people better capitalists. Well, it made them worse capitalists when they went bankrupt. The other area where the law stepped in that would be repealed, because you asked the right question, this practice of large financial institutions extending their own vulnerability through derivative transactions. And in a derivative, you theoretically have, for a very little money that you put up, you can make a lot, but you also will owe a lot. The example here is the AIG, the American International Group, which told the Bush administration in 2008 that they were $170 billion in debt beyond what they could pay. They had insured, in effect, these bad subprime loans. These things all work together. And when the loans weren't being repaid, they were on the hook to reimburse the people who had bought the securities on which these loans were based, and they couldn't do it. That's what actually touched off the crisis.
I understand that there's a Republican bill that lawmakers are looking at to replace Dodd-Frank. Have you looked at it?
I have. It's actually a bill from some Republican. The man who chairs the Financial Services Committee, Representative Hensley from Texas, is a much more conservative guy and much more of an ideological total free market guy. His proposal is a very extreme one. It's a bill that basically takes away all the regulation. It increases the amount of capital that people have to hold. In other words, what that says is, okay, let them go and make a lot of loans that are going to go bad. Let's let them take a lot of risk, and then we'll deal with it because of capital. But that's a very disruptive way to go forward.
If it were overturned, would there be telltale signs of what problems were starting to erupt?
Not necessarily right away. In fact, not right away. Look, what happens is when you have these irresponsible things in the short term, it looks good. You know, you make loans to people, they don't all go bad right away. Go back to previous crisis. Oh, there was all this enthusiasm. The property values were going up. We had more and more people owning homes. So the problem is precisely that this kind of lack of restriction, letting people take these excessive risks, looks good for a fairly short period of time. And it takes a few years for the problems to manifest.
Wow. Okay. Well, we appreciate your taking the time to explain all this to us and being here. Former Democratic Congressman Barney Frank, who also served as chair of the House Financial Services Committee. Thank you again for being with us. This is International Edition.
Are there any senators in the chamber wishing to change their vote? If not, the ayes are 52, the nays are 47, and one senator responded present. The nomination is confirmed.
The U.S. Senate confirming President Donald Trump's attorney general nominee Wednesday after more than a day of heated debate and a dramatic confrontation that led to the suspension of a prominent Democrat from floor deliberations. More than 30 years after the Senate turned him down for a judgeship, the same body confirmed long-serving Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions to be America's top law enforcement officer. Right after the vote was confirmed, Sessions addressed colleagues in Congress.
This is a special honor. I feel it in my bones. I hope and pray I can be worthy of the trust you've given me. I'll do my best to do that.
Well, an early and ardent Trump supporter during last year's tumultuous campaign, Sessions made clear during his confirmation hearing that he remains a hardliner on thorny topics like illegal immigration. Turning now to what's trending on social media, we are joined by VOA's David Byrd. Hey, David, what's going on?
Fast and continuously, it has been the new Attorney General, Alabama Senator, now Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The vote to confirm him in the U.S. Senate has been topping out the Twitter sphere. We got both positive and negative. I guess we should start at the top.
Okay.
President Trump at Real Donald Trump said congratulations to our new Attorney General at Senator Sessions. Proud American at Cypher Guy said Senator Sessions confirmed time to put Hillary in jail now. Hashtag MAGA. That's Make America Great Again for folks who don't know that. On the opposite side, the verified account for the Women's March, at Women's March, the ladies who were here
right,
the day after President Trump's inauguration, Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia was the only Democrat to vote in favor of Senator Sessions.
Really?
He crossed the aisle
and
voted yes on Sessions. And they said, at Senator Joe Manchin is the one Democrat to vote yes on hashtag Sessions. You know what this means. We will vote no on Manchin. Then Eric Cohan, at Eric Cohan, tweeted out, Jeff Sessions, the man considered to be too racist to be a federal judge, is now the Attorney General of the United States. And Lambda Legal, which is a verified account for the Lambda gay rights organization, said, this is a travesty, hashtag Sessions.
For all that happened, or what's been the big talk on social media?
Well, the president's comments on Twitter about the department store chain Nordstrom, which is a kind of a high-end department store chain on the likes of Bloomingdale's or Macy's. The president had tweeted out a few hours before the Sessions confirmation, my daughter Ivanka has been treated so unfairly by at Nordstrom. She is a great person, always pushing me to do the right thing. Terrible, with an exclamation point. The Nordstrom department store decided to drop Ivanka Trump's clothing line, her clothing and her jewelry and her shoes and things like that. And they said in their explanation that over the past year, and particularly in the last half of 2016, sales of that brand declined to the point where it didn't make good business sense for them to continue with the line. One tweeter, Rogelio Garcia, who's a lawyer, and that's at lawyer Rogelio, said Trump's at POTUS account retweeted Trump's attack on at Nordstrom. That account belongs to the people, and he has converted to the use of the benefit of Ivanka. Mark Cuban, another billionaire who's the owner of the Dallas Mavericks basketball team,
who was a Hillary Clinton supporter,
Clinton supporter. He tweeted out, let's be clear, if a public company dropped a line that was improving the overall profits of the company, the lawsuits would come quickly. That was also a trending topic on Twitter. And all of this overshadowed the release of Lady Gaga's latest single, John Wayne.
What?
Yes. Yes, because
this is a
big week for Lady Gaga because she was at the Super Bowl on Sunday.
Killed it.
And basically had a very popular halftime show, depending on
who
you ask.
Was very
well
received.
I thought it was well done.
Yeah.
It was well received by many folks. On this coming up Sunday, she's going to be performing with Metallica at the Grammy Awards.
Oh, wow. Wow, that is cool. Well, thanks so much, David. We always appreciate the perspective on social media. You can follow him at David_D Byrd, B-Y-R-D. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program, Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
I'm Victor Beatty. Since 1942, the Voice of America has been a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. Today, VOA remains committed to providing an accurate, objective, and comprehensive news product at the top of every hour, every day. We can be heard on your local affiliate or streamed on the web at voanews.com.
This is VOA's International Edition. Let's talk Hollywood news now. And for that, we're joined by Nicole Moschella, content editor with website Rare.us. Well, thanks for being with us, Nicole. I understand a member of pop singer Britney Spears' family has been in a bad accident. What happened?
So on Sunday night, Britney Spears' niece, Maddie Aldridge, who is the daughter of Britney Spears' young sister, Jamie Lynn Spears, was involved in a serious ATV accident on family property in Louisiana. The police report said that Maddie was driving the ATV and trying to avoid a drainage ditch when she accidentally overcorrected and went right into a pond. She was reportedly submerged underwater for several minutes until paramedics could arrive. Her family tried to save her, but paramedics ultimately had to pull her out of that water. And she was in critical condition for the last few days. So on Monday, Britney Spears was the first person in the Spears family to make a statement about it. She posted a picture of her niece and said, please send prayers and good thoughts to my niece. And I think those prayers might have worked because Britney Spears posted another statement saying that Maddie is making progress, but it's still going to be some time. And sources close to the family are also saying that she is awake and she's talking.
That's really great. We're certainly happy to hear that. And we send our thoughts and prayers for sure. And some prayers have been answered for Beyonce.
Beyonce is expecting twins. She blew up the internet last week with a big surprise pregnancy announcement in a risque sort of kind of photo shoot. She's posed in lingerie and she has this beautiful veil and this backdrop. And so a lot of social media users are trying to figure out what it all means that she's got this veil on and there's ivy in front of her. So clearly that's representative of her daughter, Blue Ivy. I don't know. I just thought the pictures were cute. I didn't really think too much into it, but great news for Beyonce and Jay-Z and their growing family.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Nicole. Nicole Moschella, she's the content editor with website rare.us.
This is Science in a Minute.
Observations made by Mars probes have suggested that the planet once had an abundance of water flowing over its surface. But scientists have been left scratching their heads, wondering how this would be possible, considering the ancient sun was about one-third as warm as today. A popular theory proposes that the ancient Martian atmosphere was rich in carbon dioxide, which created a greenhouse effect that would have warmed the surface enough to allow liquid water to flow on the red planet. Studies suggest that Mars lost its atmosphere to the solar wind about 4 billion years ago. New findings from NASA's Mars Curiosity rover show that sedimentary bedrock from an ancient lake does not contain any carbonates. NASA researchers say this lack of carbonates suggests that the Martian atmosphere could not have held carbon dioxide when water was said to flow on Mars some 3.5 billion years ago. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Well, we have a full house of shows in the night sky over the weekend. Not one, but three galactic events taking place. Joining me now to talk more about it is NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Ambassador Greg Redfern. Greg, so we've got the snow moon, the eclipse, and a visible comet all happening at once. Tell us more.
We have got the full snow moon, which is going to undergo a penumbral eclipse. And then there's going to be a green comet in the sky that's going to pass only 7.4 million miles from Earth. And that, by cometary standards, is pretty doggone close.
Wow. So we've got the snow moon, which is February's full moon.
Yes, we've got on February 10th.
And we've got the comet.
Yes, and that's going to be visible pretty much the entire month, but it's going to be closest to the Earth this weekend. It'll still be hanging around so people can see it. And then, of course, when we have the full snow moon, we're going to have what we call a penumbral eclipse of the moon. And let me help your Voice of America listeners a little bit if their astronomy's rusty. In a full moon, we have the Earth passing between the moon and the sun. But this is not a total or partial eclipse of the moon. It is a penumbral, which means that the outer portion of the Earth's shadow, there's two types of shadows. There's the umbra, the dark one, which we see in the partial and total lunar eclipses. And then there's the Earth's outer shadow called the penumbra. But what's really good about this eclipse, Lori, is that the moon, the full snow moon, is going to be going very, very deep into this penumbral shadow. And it almost would be a partial eclipse, just misses it by a little bit. So bottom line for our listeners is if they go outside and they look at the full snow moon, they will probably see some slight shading on the upper portion of the moon while the eclipse is going on. Well, we're trying to see if they can see it, Lori.
So where on planet Earth can we see all these things?
The comet will be visible for anybody that's in the northern hemisphere and in the lower, or excuse me, the upper part of the southern hemisphere. So your listeners in Europe and in Africa could see the comet. It's going to be visible all month. And the full snow moon, the entire eclipse event from start to finish, is visible in Africa and in Europe. And what I recommend for your listeners, Lori, is that they go to either NASA.gov or skyandtelescope.com to get the specifics for their location, because I can't give the times for everybody, because you have such a vast and huge listening audience in VOA. They just go to a website, skyandtelescope.com, or better yet, NASA.gov. Let that website know where they are, and it'll give them the time that the eclipse will be visible for them.
That was Greg Redfern, NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Ambassador. Thanks for being with us. Well, you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For the past year and a half, Haiti's political scene has been in turmoil. The electoral process to select a new president, all seats in the Senate and Chamber of Deputies, mayors countrywide, plus over 1,200 local elections, which began in late 2015, was marred by numerous delays and postponements, as well as by both widespread suffering and damage to electoral infrastructure inflicted by Hurricane Matthew in the southwest of the country. Despite these many obstacles, the government of Haiti and the Provisional Electoral Council worked effectively and responsibly to overcome organizational challenges in these elections, which the Organization of American States Electoral Observation Mission noted in its preliminary report were an important milestone for the consolidation of democratic institutions in Haiti. Although longer-term electoral reforms are still needed, Haiti is finally poised in 2017 to return to constitutional, democratically elected government with the benefits for stability and development that democratic accountability will bring. On February 7th, when President-elect Jovenel Moïse was sworn in as Haiti's 58th president, Haiti also gained a recently elected legislature, with which the new president can work to reset the future of Haitian democracy and development. In 2017, Haiti turns the page. For the next 5 years, stakeholders in Haiti have a choice. They can work together toward the common good of the nation, or they can sacrifice the interests of the Haitian people for individual advancement, notes Acting Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary and Haiti Special Coordinator Kenneth Merton. The Haitian people have a chance to progress, to strengthen their democracy, and to learn from the past even as they continue to move forward. Haiti Special Coordinator Merton recalls that over 200 years ago, the father of the Haitian Revolution, Toussaint Louverture, demonstrated leadership by reminding early Haitian patriots to reflect on the disasters which may ensue from longer obstinacy. There is no need to forsake Haiti's 213 years of accumulated nationhood by not heeding such sage advice, Ambassador Merton reminds us. Let us allow the wind to fill Haiti's sails and support its new leaders in setting the course.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. We'll be right back.
is for, what's the universe?